This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
It's the Whitecaps Weekly. It's Thursday, March 24th. Mark Weber is here.
Hello.
I'm Patrick Johnston. Are you an apparition or are you actually here? You've been doing a lot this week.
You wish.
I wish.
Am I an aberration?
Apparition, like, you know, a simulation, a hologram.
If I wish I had a carbon copy of myself this week, then I could have been at Whitecaps practice and at Canada's practice. At Mexico's practice.
Well, here's a debate. Did you miss anything at any of those practices?
If I say no, then it's sort of like lifting up the curtain on the fact that none of us really, you know, need to exist in this world, right? Makes it seem like nothing relevant happens at practice or in sport.
That's true.
Which is kind of true. I mean, you know, the game, that's what's important. All this stuff around it. It's just nonsense. But, you know, it's nonsense we love. We get paid to talk about it. So let's keep it going. Let's heighten its importance on this podcast.
We have two things to talk about this week. There's that Friday game.
That's the big one.
And there's that Saturday game.
That one, not so big.
But in terms of the Whitecaps narrative will be useful, you know, in terms of can they get themselves to 2-2?
Yeah, big early season question. No, it'll be, what am I interested in the Caps game? I'm interested to see Kudo play. I think we're going to see him start. That would be the logical replacement for Blas Perez, which we can get into a little later. I'm interested to see their makeshift back line, I guess. No, I'm not really interested to see
I'm not interested in that at all.
Does anyone ever? I mean, it's hard to get excited about a real shift back line, never mind the makeshift back line. Unless you're like a center back by trade, then that's all you talk about. No.
Mark Rogers.
Outside of that, all those guys, you know, everything has to do with the back four. I'm excited to see Kudo play. That's about where my interest starts and ends. Otherwise, I can't stop thinking about Friday. 55,000 people.
Right?
Canada, Mexico, BC place, be there.
How many
rematch
Mexicans?
Tuesday.
What's your over-under on
Estadio
Mexican
Azteca?
100,000 Azteca to see Canada
Unbelievable,
play.
Unbelievable, right? No, there will be.
I know.
Whatever it is, 98,000 there. There'll be like two Canadians up in the corner just hiding, probably wearing green. I think over under Mexican fans at BC Place, over under I would say should be set at about 10,000. I think that starts a legitimate and interesting conversation. If I was setting the betting line, that's where it would be. Somewhere around there.
I think it's going to be.
But it wouldn't shock me if it's 15,000. It wouldn't shock me if it's.
I wouldn't shock me if it was 20.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of that stadium. As I was just pointing out to you guys, it's Holy Week. Mexicans love going on vacation during Holy Week.
There's one thing I know about Mexicans. It's that they love going on vacation. I don't know that about them. Is that true?
And they love coming to Vancouver. And, well, I don't know.
Food is delicious.
Whistla, although I don't know what the Mexican version of that is. I don't remember anyway.
20,000 would surprise me, but it wouldn't shock me. It would surprise me, though. I think it's going to be closer to sort of 10,000 to 15,000 wearing green. And that leaves, 35,000, 40,000.
Mark Weber does math.
40,000 to 45,000 were in red.
Interesting. I can see why you were an art.
But here's the thing. You definitely, to make this a real game in there, a real atmosphere, a real international feeling, you want, I think, about 10,000 Mexican fans.
Probably.
In that stadium.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they'll be loud. And that's going to create the back and forth that you want and a little bit of edge in the crowd that you want to filter out onto the field. You want that. You don't want to lose your home field advantage. But few thousand Mexican fans in there, absolutely. That's going to make it a better spectacle.
This is the thing. I have friends who will be involved in the Voyagers situation, and I love them to death. But we're so damn nice.
We are. I was talking to this.
And Mexicans have an edge no matter where they are. And Mexicans have, even if they're not football fans.
Sub-poll.
They have They're conditioned to cheer for L3.
Sub-poll, how many Mexican fans will it take to dominate the remaining number of Canadian fans? What's that balance where it actually becomes feels more Mexican in there?
I think the suggestion would be the Voyageurs brought along all the Fijian fans that were at the Rugby Sevens.
They were great. Great event. I was having this conversation. Karina LeBlanc was down at Canada's practice today.
Who people didn't know was hosting at the Rugby Sevens.
She's hosting everything. She's everywhere.
Magnetic personality.
She does. She's a wonderful human being and a great host. And so she was down at Canada practice, and we were having a laugh about how polite Canadians are, because we were talking about the crowd makeup. And just to your point, she said exactly that. Like, you know, you'd have 10,000 Mexican fans, and they'll probably be louder than our fans, just because we're still, I think what we're good at now, what we're getting good at, is just volume, right?
Yes.
We've proved that. We're good at volume. Do we know how to cheer quite yet? Like, so we had a laugh about the Women's World Cup, because, you know, the Switzerland game, I remember specifically, what she said is that Canadian fans are polite a little bit, yeah, but also nervous, is what she said. We just get nervous. When we get nervous, we get quiet, right? Which is true.
Oh, God.
I think it's totally true.
Oh, God.
That Switzerland, the Canada-Switzerland game.
Ooh.
It was a library in there at halftime, right?
That's right. I remember that, yeah.
Nobody knew how the game was going to go, but it was just that the whole team, I remember John Herbman getting up, all the veterans getting up
off the bench,
turning to the crowd and just imploring them to make some noise. There's 50,000 of you in here. So I don't think it's going to be that way for this men's game, I think. And hopefully, not just because the fans are going to, you know, be self-starting, but hopefully the team gives them something. It should be a cracking game. I mean, quality-wise, there's no comparison here. I mean, Mexico is a very, very good team with very good players, and Canada is an average team with average players and a couple of above average players. It's going to take a Herculean effort. It's going to take a lot of luck. They're capable of getting a result in this game. They have the players now, but they're going to need a lot of things to go their way. I think they're going to need to. I think the fans can only help. I don't buy into this, you know, that they're going to be, I don't think they'll be overwhelmed by the moment. If they're going to be overwhelmed by anything, it'll be by Mexico. Mm. but I think the stadium will help them. And I think you saw that in the Honduras game. I mean, they enjoy playing in Vancouver. The crowd gets behind them. And, you know, as long as they don't, if they can just keep it scoreless for that first half and just get settled away, they're going to have to weather some storms. You know, the concern for me and for a lot of people, I think, is the back line for Canada. And, you know, under Benito Floro, they've been a very good defensive team. You look at their defensive record, and that's really front to back. They defend as a team, defend as a unit. A lot of guys behind the ball play a very rigid, structured game, very conservative. And then, you know, as we've seen them add more attacking pieces, they've taken a little, few more chances here and there. But, you know, it's going to come down to a very, very good defensive effort from this team. And the back four is going to have to play out of their minds. And I'm not sure they're capable of doing that. It's funny. I mean, this team, the strength of Canada through the years has always been, they're not just their defending and their grit, but also the defensive players, the players on the defensive side of the ball more than anything. And now you've got all of a sudden we're looking at the team going, hey, you've got Juno Hoylett in there. You've got Scott Arfield committed. You've got Atiba Hutchison still playing great. You've got Kyle Larin, who's coming on in Orlando and scoring goals at club level for fun and doing decently at the international level. You've got all these, you've got all this hope now that there's the ingredients are there to produce a goal. But the flip side is you look across the back line, and is there a back four there that you can with confidence say is going to be able to keep Mexico off the board? I don't think you can say that.
Hat trick for Chicharito, is that what you're saying?
It's not impossible.
Chicharito is here playing.
It's awesome.
It's amazing.
He's in decent form. I mean, he's fourth leading scorer in the Bundesliga this year, 14 goals, but he is, I think, one in his last eight overall for clubs. So maybe there's a little solace in that he's not coming in on fire. But yeah, he's obviously the number one danger man for Canada, and they can't give him an inch. And it's going to take a lot of guys to slow him down and keep him off the score sheet. But there's a lot of depth on this team. It's a young, deep Mexico side. And Canada will have their hands full. There's no question. I mean, they're going to have to win the game. If they're going to win this game or you get a point out of this one, it's going to be one of those a set piece here, one brilliant counterattack at some point during the game. They're not going to see a ton of the ball, let's be honest. And yeah, like I said, I think they're going to need the fans.
In the broader context, as you said, you know, going to Azteca next week.
Not going to win.
You know, they get a point out of these two games.
That's good. That's fine. I mean, the other scores are going to dictate how fine that is. They're going to watch that Honduras El Salvador score with great interest, of course. I mean, the best thing possible is that those two teams play to two ties. That would be fantastic for Canada. I think they're a better team. I think Canada's a better team than Honduras and El Salvador. But you know, going away to any of those teams, you don't ever assume you're going to win. So they just have to get the job done at home. And getting the job done at home against Mexico, in my mind, is getting a point that counts as getting the job done. A win would be, you know, dream stuff. And a lot, and in turn, in the big picture of Canadian soccer, and people's interest in the game and enjoyment of the game. You know, if you've got 55,000 in there and it's a fantastic game and Canada's in it the whole way and they lose on a brilliant goal or, you know, a bit of luck or whatever it is, and people still go home happy and talking about it, you can still make the case that it's a big, big win this week for the sport. But in the, you know, They want to get to that hex. They've got to get to that hex, and a point here would really, really help.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Odds they win are slight. The odds they get a draw are very low, realistically.
Well, yeah.
But in the end, it's really how the game goes. Do they look like they have a chance? And that's what will matter. I mean, that's what the Canadian fans, because up to this point, you know, the recent run of the Canadian men's team is that they never have a chance and they always look like they never have a chance.
And they've changed, and they've slowly changed perception over the last few months. And, you know, credit to them. That's been with their performances. And then the interest has picked up. The Honduras game really helped. I think, as a lot of people I talked to today pointed out, the Women's World Cup, having that here helped in terms of the interest. Everything from the rugby sevens helped. Post-Olympic Vancouver, whatever you want to make the case, it's all converged, combined to form what we see now, which is 55,000 people showing up for a soccer game on Friday. And obviously the opponent has a lot to do with that as well. But look, it's a fantastic opportunity in front of them. Tremendous opportunity. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a lot of these players to play on home soil in front of 55,000. And if they can get a job done, ensure that this continues, that this interest is there again in September. And then if you get to the hex, that the interest is there for five more home games through the hex, or, you know, however long a run you make in the hex. And those teams are going to be fun to watch too. So anyway, all good things right now. The only thing you worry about, and the only thing that could really, really ruin the day, is you go and get spanked. And that's possible. When you look at the two rosters side by side, it's possible. But everything we've seen out of this team, this Canadian team, under Benito Floro, is they don't get spanked. they are a good defensive team. They don't give teams too many looks. They understand their roles. They play within themselves. And I don't think, you know, if they come out there and just give it everything they got tomorrow, it's not going to be a lopsided game.
In the end, the last thing I was just going to say was just quickly that when we do look at the standings, we can understand kind of where Mexico is 2-0. They scored five goals. They haven't given up. Canada's the only other team in the group to have scored a goal. So if they can score a goal against Mexico, well, they will do something that neither Honduras nor El Salvador is able to do. 1-1 would be amazing. Yeah. So,
and they're capable of that. They've got the players.
There we go. Speaking of capable.
Yes.
So you're saying Kudo, no Perez.
No Perez White. International duty, no yeah. Bolaños, no yeah. Kendall Waston, no yeah. Tim Parker, yeah. No Akianz Froese got yeah. a cut in a FC2 game last week, and I think they're a little concerned that, anytime you get a head knock, I don't know right. if he's going through the league protocol right now, but he wasn't at training. So perhaps concussion concerns there, I don't know. Who else? Well, Russell Tybert's not bad. Yeah, you've got bodies missing, but so does Houston. through injuries and call-ups. And I would argue now, if you put those two teams side by side and who are the players available and what is the 11 you can put out there, Vancouver looks much stronger. And that speaks to the depth we've talked about all last year, earlier this year. It's one of those games, you know, who everyone plays a few few guys who are getting an opportunity because of injuries and absences, and which of those guys step up better. And at home, I mean, Vancouver at home against Houston is always feels like a sure thing. They're 4-0 against this team at BC Place. They spanked them a couple times, including 3-0 last year. Houston's off to a bizarre start. 1-1-1, 11 goals for, 7 goals against. They've scored the most goals in the league. It's an MLS record through 3 games.
6 goals per game.
They've conceded, played 3 games, 11-4.
Yeah, but oh, four goals, 7 goals against, didn't you say? 4 goals.
7 against.
Yeah, 18 goals. There's been 18 goals in their 3 games.
Yes, it's a lot of goals. So that's the good news.
That's more exciting than NHL hockey.
Okay, so let's change this. On Saturday, I'm looking forward to Kudo and just 7 to 10 goals combined. Like that old playoff series between was it Philly and Pittsburgh, or remember that one?
What, in the NHL?
I'm probably going. This is probably like late
80s. This is like 25 years ago.
Late 80s, early 90s. There was that, like, it was wild. It was like 12-9.
I don't really remember. 10-7. Okay. I mean, it sounds right.
I think it was Philly Pittsburgh. Maybe the Islanders were in there. Anyway, it's a team that scored a lot, but if you look at how they've scored, I mean, go watch the Houston Red Bulls highlights from last week. You know, Houston, well, they're leading 3-2, and then they blow the game 4-3 in the last 13 minutes. Two fantastic goals from Felipe for New York. But Houston's goals, I mean, credit Will Bruin. He's always seems to be right place, right time, and one-touch finishing. That's a skill. But horrendous defending from New York. I mean, Houston should not have been on the board. So if you're Vancouver looking at that game, yeah, they scored 3 goals, but you're watching it going, if you don't make a glaring mistake, you're shouting that team out. So it's been an interesting start for them. I'm not convinced they're some offensive juggernaut. I think more is what we've seen through 3 weeks around the league is that there's been some very, very poor defending for whatever reason. The start of the season, there've been some shocking goals scored. And Vancouver, as Vancouver fans know, through 2 weeks, they cleaned that up in Seattle.
They really did clean that up in Seattle.
But now you're missing your two starting center backs. Right. So now those questions return. You know, you've got Paul Mudouka, you know what he's going to offer. Although, you know, I guess 1 year older, hasn't played this year. So, you know, is he right in the flow of it yet? Because last year, if you remember, I mean, he started slowly. Then he had a terrific run for the team, but he did have a shaky first few games. So, you know, we'll see what they get out of Ka. But you can rely on him. I think he's been around the block, and he's going to be a calming influence for the team on Saturday. And you know, who do you pair him with? Is it Andrew Jacobson, who's a midfielder by trade, and you play him out of position? Probably the way Carl Robinson's going to go. He's an experienced guy. Has played a handful of games there in his career, or you go with Cole Seiler, the rookie. Which, okay, he's a natural center back, but you know, is that more or less risky than going with a player out of position? I think he'll go with Khan and Jacobson, and I think he'll go 4-4-2 because it worked in Seattle, and Perez was very influential down there. But I think they want to get Kudo involved, and it makes sense to get him involved in that formation. And you're missing. You don't really have the right players anyway. Even if you wanted to play 4-2-3-1, Jacobson's playing center back probably. Keons Froese is out. Russell Tybert's out. You got Bolaños away. So I think that's what we'll see. And I think that's what fans want to see. Everyone seemed quite pleased to see two forwards on the field in Seattle, and it's a formation. You know, I think we'll see more of it home than away this year. I think it was a little more strategic from Carl Robinson in Seattle, just the way that Seattle sets up with that 4-3-3. I think he liked the idea of getting two forwards out there and trying to isolate their center backs. And we saw it worked at the end. I mean, Perez gets one-on-one with Chad Marshall at the end. Oh, so many talking points in that game. I'll just shut up now and let you ask questions. But I mean, it's a wonder. The only thing you can ask for more out of a Caps Seattle rivalry, you know, the game's going to be great, and all you want is just more controversy to come.
Yeah.
Out. From a media perspective, it was terrific. You got Zach Scott beaking off after the game. You've got two controversial penalties
and Marshall beaking off.
Oh, I missed Marshall's comments.
Well, I think it was Monday, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe
they finally got to him.
Ziggy whining after the game. Perez, look, fair play to the Seattle. I mean, if you flip those calls around, Vancouver fans would have been livid. I don't think, having watched each of those PKs probably 20 times now, I'm still going back and forth. I was in the stone cold PK crowd on the Perez one.
I'm stone cold.
Until yesterday. And now I've watched it like a few more times and I'm just like, yeah, look, it's a very shrewd veteran move. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
Credit to him. Marshall puts himself in a very, silly position, I think. I mean, he just opens himself up for the call to be made. But if you really evaluate it just on I'm not finding the word I'm looking for, but, you know, he does get the ball first. Perez, by the time Perez tumbles over him, he's actually tumbling over like him at about waist to shoulder, somewhere in them. He's like about torso height when he's tumbling over Marshall, and he's sort of leaning into him, and he's going over, and the ball's kind of going out of the picture. But I think that one's extremely justifiable and a very hard one to argue, although clearly a lot of people have been able to argue it.
I think if
Seattle,
the first one didn't get called, first it wouldn't one, be such a controversy.
Yeah, you add them up, and it feels like they're hard done by. I mean, Bolaños, the more I've watched it again, I don't think he gets clipped. Apparently, there's an angle out there that shows that. I think what happens is maybe he gets clipped earlier when they first enter the box, but then he takes another step, and then his toe goes in the turf, clearly.
Yes.
And then that brings him down. It doesn't look like a dive so much as it looks like he got his foot caught on the turf. So yeah. Now you've got the second question is, did he do that on purpose or not? Which you can't. I mean, if you're the disciplinary committee and you're now reading intent into whether a turf dig was intentional or not. I mean, Siggy Schmidt after the game implied that it was. That he's seen. Oh, I've seen players.
No,
I've seen players stick their toe in the turf before and go for a tumble. Not saying he did it. I've just seen it before. It's possible. I like that one, but I don't think the league's going to be able to do anything.
Bolaños' answer after the game was very cagey. He said, "I wouldn't have gone down. I wouldn't go down if there wasn't touched," which is what he said, basically, right? So he felt his foot go. He doesn't know why. You know,
sure. Maybe he thought something. Maybe he thought his toe in the turf was actually someone's boot underneath him. I mean, you can dissect it all you want. It was a very harsh penalty from Seattle's perspective.
The thing that kind of surprised me was that Jovan Jones didn't complain more. I thought I was shocked at how he, you know, because usually soccer players are quick to argue, and he was just maybe he was just so dumbfounded about what had gone on, but his reaction was sort of like, well, I guess I got caught.
And people pointed to that too, right? Like, oh, he must have clipped him. He didn't really react. So
it was weird. It was kind of,
anyway,
the Chad Marshall comments Matt Pence got on Tuesday.
Perfect.
From Chad Marshall.
Thanks,
so Matt. Marshall had not really said stuff, but on Tuesday they play a ball over the top. It's a foot race with Perez, Marshall said. I go to ground there, and I think without the contact initiated by him that I get to the ball. His hip throws me off, and I don't get there. I haven't seen a replay of it, but I probably need to be smarter there and stay on my feet and not let the ref have that decision.
Okay, well, that's pretty much.
But I mean, he admits that he basically got outsmarted by a veteran player.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah. It was two veteran players, and one of them outsmarted the other. I mean, Chad Marshall has to know.
Well, that's spot. Perez
has
been around long enough.
He's putting himself in a terrible position there to get called for that PK. So I zero sympathy on that one. Whether or not if you really boil it down and look at it in slow mo, clearly, you know, Perez is doing his thing, and but. You know, that's why they signed him. I mean, the influence he had on that game, he plays the ball, a very good ball, perfectly weighted into Bolaños, knows exactly how to get Bolaños into that position where he can maybe draw a PK or create a chance. And a great run from Bolaños too.
And the ball was smart, nice from
the two of them. That's, you know, you put smart players in the field together and those things happen. He draws the winning PK. He gets guys riled up. He's shoulder barging Zach Scott 5 minutes into the game. He gets the crowd against him. you know, he kept the ball at times. When they needed him to, he milked the clock when they needed him to once they got the lead. I mean, it's amazing how perception can change once a guy like that is on your team, right?
It's everything he does is everything he used to frustrate you because yeah. Also I think what it is that you know he's loving it.
Oh.
It just is loving it.
And I think the best sign for the Caps is you know, that okay, it's week 3, but it's their first test in a big game at a big rival in front of a big crowd. It's the kind of the game had a lot of feeling in it. It's the kind of game that they're going to be in, they hope, in November, in December, and the kind of game that before they signed Perez, you wondered if they had the type enough players and the type of players to win those games. And now he's just gone and proved, I don't care what week it is, week 1, if you're playing Seattle away, he's proved that in that game, he's got that caginess about him, and he's going to make a difference. And he also played the ball to Chera for that chance, I believe, at the end that Chera should have scored on.
Yeah, that's right.
He played another one down to Rivero that Rivero could have done better on. I mean, he could have had 3-4 setups that game. So, you know, the hard thing for Carl Robinson, I think, is that Perez is 35. The hard thing is going to be for Robinson is going to be convincing himself not to play him too much, right? I mean, like, the temptation is going to be to get this guy every week on the field because he's their best forward. There's no question he's their best forward all around, I think. But you got to keep his age in mind. You got to keep his freshness in mind. You need him come playoff time. So, you know, then lead him at times throughout the season. But I think fans, you know, will understand that when he's not playing, there's a longer term plan here.
I think that's the case.
You're not going to start Blas Perez 25 games at 35 years old. That would be ridiculous.
No, and not when you have, you know, 3 strikers you think you can start. So, the thing I do hope from that game especially was that Rivero saw what went on there because, you know, I think if there's something that we've realized with Rivero is that he is not good at strategically placing himself at the right moment. He's good at drawing fouls, but he thinks he's good at drawing fouls, but he doesn't often get the validation, and then he gets frustrated. And Perez put himself in spots where the ref really had to think about it, and he went with it.
That's an interesting point. Perez drew 6 fouls. It was a game high, and it started about a couple of minutes in, I remember. Within like 5 minutes, he'd drawn 2 very crafty fouls in good areas for the Whitecaps. And yeah, it is interesting. Rivero, I mean, he's got that reputation early on in his MLS career for diving, and it's so hard to shake that now. Because it is tough for him to buy a call. And like you say, I think that's a very good point. He gets worked up when he doesn't get the calls.
Yeah.
And he expends too much energy worrying about the referee.
Well, it threw him off last year. I think that was part of his thing. He was having trouble finishing, and then he wasn't getting the calls he thought he was going to be getting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, look, Rivero's a fascinating case study still, I think, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fans obviously have different opinions on him. But, you know, guys who've played the game who I respect and talk to offline, you know, very split on Rivero. There's still guys who say, like, he is the real deal. Like, he's going to get a couple and he's going to go on another role. There's so many things about his game he does well. You know, just give him a little more time. And there's other guys who's, I don't know, you know, he's just, the goals aren't there. You know, the scoring record speaks for itself. The goals aren't there. He doesn't get himself into enough scoring positions, or when he does, he doesn't make the most of them. Or, you know, how long can we keep saying, you know, talking about all the stuff he does off the ball? So, you know, we don't know yet. I mean, the jury's out on Rivero. I think, let's see him. You know, one point, Carlo Corazino, who I asked about Rivero the other day, you know, he said, you know, guy like him, and Carlo said this last year right away almost, is that, you know, he play this guy with a strike partner and let's see what he's got. He's got the tools. Let's play him in a 2 and see what happens. And, you know, one game is not enough in that to know whether that's true or not. So he's done, you know, let's remember that he's up top by himself all the time. ton of hard work, very isolated last year, which is frustrating on top of, you know, not getting calls. So
he didn't have a time. I mean, Teixeira came in, half, you know, really halfway through the season, and they, you know, didn't have a chance. Look how long it took Teixeira to kind of get his game.
And they had good chemistry together. Right? You could see that. And Mosquito, absolutely. Again, we haven't talked about a lot this year because he's been out. He's ready to go now, I think, whether he starts.
Well, he was on the bench last week.
I think he'll come off the bench and play some minutes in this one. But to me, Rivero's best stuff last year came with Mosquito in the lineup. You know, whether that's kind of anecdotal or whether, you know, there are some statistics that bear that out. If you look at when the Caps were in their best run of form, it was when those three guys were on the field at the same time, the three Uruguayans. So there is some chemistry there. And I think Nico understands, you know, how Octavio wants to play, where he wants the ball. And, you know, they know each other's movements instinctually. You can see that. So maybe that helps him a little bit to get his season off the mark. He's had some good chances. I mean, he hit the bar on that. That would have been a fantastic goal against Montreal. He's had a couple of headers where you feel like he should have done better with them, but at least he's in the box and getting there. I mean, that's at times last year you could, you know, Carl Robinson, the gripe was that he wasn't getting himself in the box enough. And that's one of the reasons they brought Kudu in.
That was one of my thoughts against Montreal was that, okay, you want him putting those headers in the corners of the net, but at least he's getting the headers because he wasn't.
It was a good save. I've seen that debated.
But there were a couple other ones where, he didn't make the goalie move much, but he got his head on the ball, and that's at this point.
That's a starting point.
You know?
$900,000. Just get your head on the ball.
All right. So are they going to score a goal in open play? Because that is another talking point for you.
I love it. Ask a tough question. Somebody said that to me. What do you mean? Well, they haven't scored a goal from open play. All right. Well, they just beat Seattle. So, like, let's. All right. You usually wait a day and then you start nitpicking, right?
Carl, you won 2-1, but nothing's
Carl,
from open
play. Congrats
on
the goal. No goals from open play.
What's the
problem? Congrats on the win in Seattle. No goals from open play.
Was it you that he quoted the answer back to you?
Is that a big concern right now after this Seattle game that you've just won? Are you concerned?
Was it you? You asked Carl something, and then he said, well, what would you say? And then you told him the answer, and then he gave... Was that Carl?
I don't remember.
I think it was.
He likes that one, though.
It was a good one. What would you say?
Look, if they go four games without a goal from open play, all right, then we can talk about it. I mean, creating chances is the thing. The goals come down to finishing, all right? Do they have enough finishers in this team? That's still up for debate. You know, I think, and that's why Kudo becomes such a fascinating piece of the puzzle this week, because he's hands down, when you watch practice, hands down their best finisher. It's not even close. They need some other guys to sharpen up around goal, no question. Kukudamani should have a couple goals this year. Rivero should have a goal or two this year. Teixeira hasn't really got going yet. He's just not looked himself, and whether that's, you know, fitness coming into preseason a little bit behind, that's my gut feeling on it. But three games is not a ton to judge guys on so far, but they have been generating enough chances to score goals from open play. They can certainly generate a little more. And that'll come, I think, as guys get used to each other, as Bolaños and Pedro are out there together more, and Blas is on them more. But this is a good team, and they've got some good offensive players. So the goals will come from open play. I think the concern is this. It's less that than it's just the same concern there was last year. Is there enough finishing in this team? But I think they have kind of guarded against that a little bit by just adding some more players who are going to get you 5 or 6 or 7 goals. Bolaños, Perez, Kudo. So even if they don't have that one clinical guy, if one guy goes cold, they at least have some options now. I mean, last year it's like Rivero goes stone cold. Well, who are you going to play? Darren Maddox? You can start Darren every game, and then people are going to gripe about Darren's finishing. So they didn't really. Now you got plan B, you got plan C in some spots. So I think just collectively they'll score more this year. It's a little troubling, the fact that they haven't. I think the most troubling thing is just a little bit slow starts for the wingers to me. I mean, Kukudamani has not looked great. Teixeira has not looked great. Those guys need to get themselves going here.
Slightly different roles too, I guess, with sort of the different people that have come in the lineup. So, I mean, here's their weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a great, Houston's a very beatable team. Their team has given up a lot of goals. The Caps wide guys at home should be, you know, a huge part of them tearing teams apart. I like the idea of Pedro playing a bit deeper and having that whole field in front of him to spray balls into, and having those wingers latching onto that. And Pedro, Kakuta seems to play well to me when Pedro's better to me when Pedro's in the lineup. I think those two have a decent connection there. And you know, when Pedro plays that, he's just so good at pinging that 40-yard diagonal ball and just and getting Kakuta free. So they'll get off the mark. I mean, I wouldn't be too concerned about it right now. And you know, the flip side is two set piece goals in that first game. That's something we griped about the last ever since they've entered MLS. So that should be something that they're a little better at this year.
The Robinson quote was about the PKs. That's what it was. He said, "On if he's seen the two penalty kicks." Yeah. No, I haven't. I could sit here and say it's two non-penalties or two penalties. I don't know. What did you see? Mark apparently responds, "The first one was a little bit shaky."
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, who's?
I don't know who said that.
Someone said that. First one was a little bit shaky. The second one looked to be pretty fair. Carl Rabo, okay, the first one looked a little bit shaky, and the second one was fair. So
I think that's a good assessment.
Yeah. Anyway, we've already brought that up. Roof open, closed, either day.
Yeah.
Both days.
Apparently, I asked people.
Why wouldn't you open it?
Well, no, you got to open it if you can. The reason you wouldn't open it is just...
you want the Mexicans to freeze.
Pasco nonsense, I think. It's just, apparently, they have to have it closed by midnight. I don't know. You hear all these different things. Apparently, they have to have it closed by midnight. So, and there's certain weather that they can't close it in.
Right.
If the weather is a certain degree of severity, whatever that is, and whoever decides that, I think they get like Mark Dreesen on the phone and he decides when they're...
Is Mark Dreesen still the guy?
I don't know.
You're really dating yourself there, Weaver. Are you thinking about Mark Dreesen on UTV? Maybe. Bottom of the hour weather updates.
Who was the other guy? He did it from the
Mark
boat.
Mark Rodriguez.
Boat sometimes.
Oh, from the boat. Oh, Wayne. What's his name?
Yeah. Wayne. Wayne, what's his name? Yeah. In the Hawaiian shirts?
Yeah.
Where were we? Yeah, so if the weather is too severe at, say, 11 p.m. and they can't close it and they can't get it closed in time for midnight, then so that's part of the evaluation. I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's apparently part of the evaluation. And then it's just the actual weather at the time in the afternoon or wherever that they're going to make that decision. You know, if it's a torrential downpour, they can't open
right.
it. And the way it's been explained to me is it has to do with health and safety regs, or... Because there's people up there. It's not like someone flicks a switch.
I'm making a face.
It's not like someone... You're making a face. It's just why I'm quiet.
Eyebrows, my best
it's not like
Spock
someone
split
just
eyebrows.
Flicks a switch downstairs and the thing just opens itself. I think there's people pulling on ropes up on the roof. No, I'm just kidding. But that wouldn't surprise me. Anyway, there's apparently a few things. What I also have heard...
Is there a crow's nest
up
there
heard,
too?
Which I believe to be more true, is that it has to do with the rain and the scoreboard.
I can believe that.
That the scoreboard can only take a certain amount of
I can believe
deluge, and that if they're concerned about the amount of rain and the score, the multi-million-dollar scoreboard that apparently can't get wet. That's a pod for another day. That's also a factor.
By the way, at the Sevens, I was disappointed nobody tried to hit it with a ball, because when I was there, Whitecaps Media Day 2012, you might remember this. Players were trying to hit it. Somebody came
People
screaming out of nowhere.
Always try to hit
Please
the
stop.
The goalkeepers love that one. Just punting balls right. up at the scoreboard.
I'm just testing.
Till a panel comes careening down.
All right, Mark, we got to go. You've been here.
Get out of here.
Long enough.
My parking's up.
All right. See you later. Have fun this weekend.
I will.
We'll see you at the end of it. Maybe.
I'll be here next week.
Last man standing.
Yeah.
All right. Cheers.